Your inspiration for today's sermon was a quote from the UU minister, Reverend Ken Hurto, from Florida. He wrote, "One of the major shifts in human understanding has been a move away from seeing ourselves as solitary, independent agents in charge of our own destiny towards a more complex awareness that who we are is a direct function of who we are with. We are relational creatures. Everything about us is shaped by our connections or our disconnections with those around us." Here ends the quote. The unstated conclusion from that quote seems to be that if we're to become the person we want to be, we must carefully manage the relationships in our lives, including selecting those with whom we will associate and those whom we will choose to avoid. What criteria should we be using when we're making those choices? And how will we know if we've chosen our friends and our associates wisely? The question of choosing our associates and friends is more than a matter of improving our socioeconomic status in the world. The question of choosing who we will associate with is a profoundly spiritual question. Spirituality and connection are synonymous. There is the material world, and there is the relational world. Material world, the world of individual entities, flowers, animals, single-celled amoebas, to giant spiral galaxies. The relational world is the world of connection between these things. And the spiritual is the world of personal human connection, personally felt human connection. The world that calls us to engage for a purpose beyond our own physical needs. The process of real connection is a spiritual process, whether that's a matter of connecting to nature, to our own emotions, to music, or to one another. You'll notice that the topic for the humanist meeting later today is, do we choose our identity or does it choose us? And this is, I understand, a follow-up on Mary Lou's excellent presentation from last week. I hope you'll forgive me if I address that question briefly in my sermon today. Mary Lou pointed out that our identity is shaped by many things, some of which we have little or no control over. Our genes, and our family, and our location, and our native language, and our culture, and the people we're exposed to in our youth. Mary Lou went on to tell us there is another level that shapes us and shapes our identity. Today I'm focusing on the idea that our parents may have been right when they wanted us to hang out with the right crowd. They knew that our identity could be shaped by the people we chose to associate with. It's important to note that just because we associate with individuals, I remember having this discussion, just because we associate with individuals doesn't follow that we're modeling them for ourselves, that we're modeling ourselves after their lifestyle. We can have eccentric friends without becoming eccentric. But that, of course, would be from the perspective of a parent. And might be more on that later in the sermon. The fact that we can choose to some extent who we will associate with recognizes the role of our free will in shaping our identity. Free will is something that science cannot yet explain, and something that makes us uniquely human. Our free will is arguably our most precious possession. And in spiritual terms, our free will is a sacred trust between each individual and the universe that supports us. It's the ultimate gift to us, deserving the ultimate care by us. Our free will allows us to choose to practice and discipline ourselves to associate with others without judging ourselves by their standards. I say discipline because we can easily be trapped by the standards imposed on us by others and by the broader society in which we live. Henry Nouwen put this much better than I could when he wrote, "Over the years, I've come to realize that the greatest trap in our life is not success, popularity, or power, but it is rather self-rejection. Success, popularity, and power can indeed present a great temptation, But their seductive quality often comes from the way they are a part of a much larger temptation of self-rejection. When we've come to believe in the voices that call us worthless or unlovable, then success, popularity, and power are easily perceived as attractive solutions. The real trap, however, is self-rejection. As soon as someone accuses me or criticizes me, as soon as I am rejected, left alone, abandoned, I find myself thinking, well, that proves once again that I'm a nobody. My dark side says, I'm no good. I deserve to be pushed aside, forgotten, rejected, or abandoned. Self-rejection is the greatest enemy in the spiritual life because it contradicts the sacred voice that calls us the beloved. Being the beloved constitutes the core of the truth of our existence. Henry Nouwen is telling us here that regardless of what anyone says, we are all creatures of worth and dignity and deserving of love. But we know how difficult it is to find the unconditional love that we crave. The amount of loneliness in the world seems to paradoxically increase with our ability for individuals to connect to one another through electronic media. It should be evident to everyone by now that the number of friends you have on Facebook doesn't correlate positively with your happiness or the health of your relationships. In fact, I suspect that a strong inverse relationship exists, meaning that the more one strives to increase the quantity of friends, the less happiness they have, and the less happiness they're likely to experience in life. Loneliness may be the single biggest source of pain and suffering in our ever-connected society. As we measure our self-worth based on our level of financial success, popularity, or power, we yearn for friends who will help us to achieve those goals. And we reject those who need us to help them. The cult of the individual is dominant in our current society. Our value is defined by the context of what we own, who we know, and the power that we wield. Our ego becomes paramount. And yet we know that in the big picture, we are all relational creatures. Any profound sense of meaning that we can have in our lives and that might survive our death ultimately depends on our relationship to others and the effect that we have on them. We are all connected in a very profound way. And as the words from the hymn we had for the prelude said, deep in our hearts there is a common vision. Deep in our hearts, there is a common song. Deep in our hearts there is a common story, telling creation that we are one. So in conclusion, I'll tell you that we should all choose our friends wisely. We should choose friends who will help us grow spiritually and who will help us to grow beyond our egos. Some of those friends will be mentors who can help us to achieve strength and perseverance that might seem beyond our capability at the time. But other friends, other very important friends, will be those who can teach us humility, who can show us just how fortunate our lives have been. Some of our friends need to be people who test our patience, test our generosity. The purpose of the church is to help us as individuals to lead a good life. That means experiencing life in all its complexity. That means growing in spirit, but it also means helping others to grow in spirit, even when that makes us uncomfortable. After rereading what I had just written, I realized that what I was writing was from the perspective of a privileged white male. Sex complicates all our attempts to choose our friends, especially so for women. As the current revelations of the abuse of power or sexual favor is so clearly demonstrating. Church needs to be a safe place where we can reach out to others without fear of sexual predators from predators of any kind. And yet church has often been a breeding ground for sexual predators. And Unitarian Universalism is no different in that way than other religious faiths. Church can be a place where power invested in clergy is abused. This has happened in all religious faith traditions. In the ideal world, congregations would be a safe place for all. This congregation, this Universalist Unitarian Church of Halifax, must be a safe place for you to grow in spirit and to make friends that will take you outside your comfort zone. But getting outside your comfort zone should not put you at risk of physical or mental abuse. Like many things in life, the exploration of relationships outside our comfort zone is often best done with company. A church provides a place where we can reach out to help others in the company of other people that we trust. But a church requires an effective safe church policy. And that's why we need to have two adults, for example, in our RE classes. These policies need to be well known and understood by the congregation. They must become part of our culture. And we have such a safe church policy at UUCH, but it needs to be reviewed and updated and explained in detail to the congregation. Choose your friends wisely. Who you are attracted to, who do you avoid? What's your goal in life? Is it just to avoid conflict, to live peacefully in isolation? Perhaps even to turn your back on others who need you as a friend. If you want to live a good life, you must choose your friends wisely. But that's not nearly as simple as it sounds. Mahatma Gandhi said, "The best way to find yourself is to lose yourself in service to others." When we're serving others from a place of unconditional love, we are receiving gifts of immeasurable value. A good life, a healthy life, just like a healthy diet, requires a variety of friends. May it be so.